Hi, I'm Daryl Cagle, and this is the Cagle Cast, where we're all about political cartoons, and I'm pleased to introduce Taylor Jones and Ed Wexler. They're going to show you a bunch of great art along with some excellent Trump-bashing cartoons, because we all have the passion for bashing the Trump. Ed Wexler was an Emmy-nominated creative director at Disney Television Animation for 30 years. He was also a regular cartoonist and illustrator for U.S. News and World Report, and he has drawn the covers for the Hollywood Reporter's Emmy and Academy Awards issues for many years. Ed, here's your felon.
Felon. Yeah, it was fun creating this little alphabet, this little Trump alphabet.
Have you done the whole alphabet?
No, but I'm only missing a handful of consonants.
Maybe you should just do the whole alphabet so you have the whole thing.
I more or less do. I don't think I have a G, and I don't think I have a W, for example.
Well, you got hush money.
Yeah.
That's looking good.
You know, I found there was a question of readability. When the words get too long, it's hard to read. It's hard to understand what they're spelling out.
So have you thought about doing dirty words or symbols for like Comic-Con bad words?
No, it did not occur to me to do that.
And you've done a bunch of these, and you've done them for some other figures too, correct?
Or is it just letters that spell things? I don't think so.
Well, does this date back, how many would you say you've done of Trump as the alphabet man?
What have there been, four or five of them, Daryl?
Does this date back
to... Well, here you've got fraud.
Yeah. I think that may have been the first one I did. One of the first.
Fraud ones. Was the first one?
It could have been.
I like the vile, toxic liar.
That's good.
That's excellent.
Thanks. You know, in my mind, it's very Pushpin. My early influences were Pushpin Studios.
How is the Pushpin Studios?
How is it my influence?
Well, how is that influence showing in this work?
The playfulness of the
Pushpin typography. Studios is what Milton Glaser and
Seymour Quast,
who are also very far apart stylistically. And there were some others, weren't there?
Ed Sorrell.
Yes.
Was one of
them. Those guys are absolutely different.
Yeah, they all went to Cooper Union, where I went to school. But the reason I brought that up was because Quast in particular was all about the interesting typography. And I was thinking of him when I started doing these.
So the commonality is that they're illustratory graphic designers.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Ed, when I see these, your Trump alphabet man, I always think back to Tommy Toon, Song and Dance Man from the 60s. And this was one of his staples because he was a very tall, limber fellow. And he was very good at creating himself as various letters.
I know who he is, but I didn't know that he did letters. I don't remember that.
Yeah, I think so.
Have Trump moving around and looking energetic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like looking at a little Trumpy dance.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it was a little strange because he's all different scales to make these letters work. You know, like, for example, look how big he would be in the letter A, for example. You know, he's a giant.
Yeah, it's almost like you could do a Jules Pfeiffer thing, and he could be saying, I dance to the sun, I dance to the flowers, like Jules Pfeiffer, and he spells out vile, toxic liar. That would be a funny cartoon.
That would be a funny one. I did a takeoff on him several years ago already, but you're right. Maybe that's worth thinking about.
You ever accidentally misspelled a Trump cartoon?
I'm no stranger to misspelling words in cartoons.
Boy, misspellings are a curse on us. Cartoonists are terrible spellers, and I brag about not killing cartoons, but if you count the misspellings, I kill tons of cartoons. Every week I kill cartoons.
My first misspelling was, who was the guy, the Supreme Court judge that likes
Alito?
Beer? The one that likes
Kavanaugh.
Beer. At Kavanaugh. I spelled his name Kavenaugh, and it was in USA Today. Remember that one, Daryl?
I remember getting letters from editors about that because we didn't catch it.
Yeah. I was the spelling champion of my public school when I was in the sixth grade. So
me too. Well, I'm not the whole school. I'm not in my sixth grade class. We're both on Long Island. And I was able to do it because I was the only one who could spell Khrushchev.
Oh,
my goodness.
I won with the word colonel because I watched Hogan's Heroes. And then LeBeau used to say, colonel. Hello, colonel. And it told me how to spell word.
Very good. Hey, this one is wonderful. This one, I expect, was after the E. Jean Carroll second verdict for, 80-some million dollars.
I think you're right.
And that's lovely. And I love the cartoon trope. We don't see that very often, and you would think that we would.
You mean the device of a barrel?
The barrel defining that he's broke and he's unhappy about going broke. It's a very Depression-era cartoon, and it's wonderful.
You could have a bunch of them in barrels. Juliana barrel as well?
Yeah, but... with Trump, you know that he's so money focused and it's his big issue. And Giuliani is just kind of mentally ill.
I haven't seen a lot of Giuliani recently.
I read about how much trouble they had serving him with a subpoena on the last court case. He's kind of hard to find, I think. Purposefully so. I thought this one was wonderful. He's yelling, "I did nothing wrong," as he's falling off Trump Tower. Of course,
I did nothing wrong.
Yeah, this is the wrong. That's wonderful. You know, he said his apartment was so much bigger, worth so much more than it actually was. And I presume that's what this one is about, as his Trump Tower house of cards collapses.
This was a fun one to do. Was it? A little tricky to have so many little shapes, lots of lines and stuff like that, and still be able to read what the heck's going on.
Well, you know, Ed, with your work, your animation past always shines through.
Thanks. I spent a long time doing that stuff. It helps in staging and action cartoons.
Taylor, we have come to you. I thought this was a lovely one. Taylor Jones is a brilliant caricaturist. He draws for the Hoover Digest at Stanford University. He was a staff cartoonist for many years for the El Nuevo Dia newspaper in Puerto Rico. And he drew for many years for U.S. News and World Report magazine also, and he's won a ton of awards. Taylor, this is Trump looking at his $60 Bible with
sleeping
Daniels and Cohen and Hope Hicks.
Right.
That's a wonderful Hope Hicks.
Thank you, Ed.
Love
it. It is. The eyes are so,
good. So good.
You know, she turned out a little more difficult than I thought, only because she's got that very small nose. I would like to see her without all the makeup. She could do tutorials, I suppose, TikTok tutorials on makeup application. But I'd kind of like to see her without all the makeup.
I'm very impressed with her eyebrows. I think those are kind of clownish. I mean, they are so heavy and so darkly drawn. It's like she does her eyebrows with a Sharpie.
Trump Sharpie.
Well, he's actually, Trump is asleep there on his Bible. You know, somebody pointed out to me.
I see.
Somebody pointed out to me on Facebook, and I hadn't intended for this, but you know, in the Bible, they've got the little divider. And of course, at least I remember Bibles growing up, they'd have them. They'd either be red or green or black and something so you could keep your page. And when I posted that on Facebook, somebody commented that, oh, you know, that was a nice twist, making it a forked tongue, which hadn't been my intention. But I said, I appreciated that.
Oh, I see that now. The bookmark. There's a fork. Yeah. Whoa, that's a happy little accident.
So I thought this one was a good one. This is Kanye West taking on his support of Trump.
You know, that's interesting that you started doing orangey, reddish hair for Trump, because he's only started with the, you know, he's mostly white or light yellow, but he's been getting more into the oranges.
Yeah, well,
recently.
That seems to happen with people who die. The dye just gets stronger and stronger.
It's hard to mix the color every time.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he dyes his hair. You know how old ladies make their hair blue? And they do that because their hair is looking kind of orange instead of being a nice clean gray. They want to gray it down by adding the compliment. I think Trump just has yellowy gray hair.
Well, Daryl, I think you're right there.
I think it's white.
Well, I thought that Gary Trudeau had a great way to describe Trump's hair, that it's a confection.
And, like cotton candy.
Like cotton candy. Because you can't, if you, when you see him on television, you can't see where the hair starts and stops and where his skin starts. And he used to dye his eyebrows dark. You know the pictures of him and Jeffrey Epstein? There's this one picture where they're ogling young girls and he's got like black eyebrows. Who dyes their eyebrows?
Here you've got Charlottesville. He says, this has been going on for a long, long time. That is just great. I love the hair.
I'd forgotten that one, Daryl. Thanks for resurrecting. Well,
that's a great cartoon. And the hair is just lovely.
Well, let's hear for Tiki Torches.
Tiki Torches. Yeah, I'm seeing this.
Here you have Trump with Stormy Daniels. She's singing, happy lawsuit, Mr. President. Happy lawsuit to you, like Marilyn Monroe. Marilyn. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think newspapers printed this cartoon.
No, bloggers may have.
Bloggers. I thought this was a great one. Here you got Biden family having picnic lunch, and Hunter Biden is just the stinky skunk at the picnic, and that's so funny.
I love the liver spots. That's a good Kamala.
She's fun to caricature. Apparently, back when she was maybe the district attorney of San Francisco before she became attorney general of the state. And apparently Michelle Obama would sort of remark that her husband was quite attracted to Kamala. But since then, you know, Kamala is sort of disappearing into her neck, if you've noticed.
All the people sitting at the table, the one that bothers me least is Hunter Biden, because I feel sorry for him.
I feel bad for him, he's a drug addict. He's a screw-up.
The stuff he's done has been stuff that he's suffered for, and he's that albatross around Dad's neck, and I think that's just kind of sad.
What do you think of his artwork, if you've seen some of his paintings?
He's not that bad.
I agree.
That kind of surprised me, because I would have expected some kind of George W. Bushy paintings that just make you cringe, but he's actually pretty good.
How would you describe his painting? I haven't seen any.
I think his paintings look like... you're going to University of California and you're an art major and you got a good grade.
Yeah, the abstract expressionism, I guess. Okay. But they're not bad. I saw in the New York Times of the day, they had an article about his gallerist. And I mean, of course, the prices are outrageous, but they really, you know, I think I would have stopped in the gallery if I'd been in Manhattan and taken a look.
So Trump crucified. This vicious persecution is a travesty of justice. Heck, you nailed yourself up there. You're still clutching the hammer, his top secret documents. And, you know, I think he's just getting out of that. He's essentially won that case with his crooked judge.
I usually stay away from religious symbols in my cartoons. Did you get letters from this one? Hate mail?
I mean, personally, I don't know. I don't know where it appeared. Maybe nobody printed it. I don't know.
The crucifixions don't get printed much. I think everybody's done some. And I've never gotten really angry mail about crucifixions either. It's not something that drives people crazy.
It's not. It's a bit surprising.
I thought this was lovely too. Here's Trump winning the Iowa caucuses. That's great fun. Here's Judge Cannon. Yeah, this is very nice. And she certainly is quite the Trump proponent. And it looks like now the whole case is just going to fade away. And that is quite a victory for Trump. You know, we went into this thinking that things were looking bad for Trump. And actually, things are not looking so bad.
No. And nobody's talking about him being a criminal, indicted criminal.
The case that got him to be the felon is just not something that we care too much about, and not something anybody else would have been prosecuted for.
Ed, I love your Eileen Cannons. I think you've done at least two or three of them, haven't you?
I think I've done three.
Yeah, you've got that.
She's only famous for one photograph.
Exactly, and you've made the most of it. You've got the smile right and those little twinkly. Very, very, you know, those eyes where the irises are like black.
Well, she is just terrible.
By the way, that's Trump's actual signature that I dropped in.
Yeah, you do that well, too.
I thought this was fun. Here, Don Jr. and Eric, and Don says, how should I know where the accountants get their numbers? And Eric says, I'm not a money guy. I pour concrete. They're twumpy dumb and twumpy dumber. That's fun.
He actually said that, too, concrete.
This is when they were both testifying in New York at his hush money trial. And this is great.
Another little Disneyism there.
These are actual quotes. And of course, you know, one of the great things about being a cartoonist is you can make people say anything you want. But the downside of that is people don't really trust that what you're making them say is something that they actually said. It's nice if people can recognize that they actually said things like that, because that does give it more power. But I'm not quite sure how to do that.
I don't know. How about using some big quotation marks?
You can put a little thing in the corner that says...
Actual
quotes. Maybe a little arrow. Actual quote.
Didn't somebody do that in the National...
Yeah, I think it's been done.
Stan Mack, Real Life Feast.
Here you've got Trump and Uncle Sam, and he's saying, take two Tide Pods and call me in the morning. That's very funny. This is a COVID cartoon, I'm sure, as he's been talking about people drinking bleach.
Boy, I was full of attitude about Trump. That's one of the uglier Trumps I've ever drawn.
There was news at the time of kids eating Tide Pods because they look like candy or they look like toys.
Apologies for the sun, having to put on the sunglasses, but the glare is starting to give me an eye ache. So
it does make you look like a funny cartoon character.
It has those circles.
Yeah, something over my pupils. I can do funny things. Oh, wow.
Another cartoon thing with the screaming head popping out of the phone.
Now, that's something that I think an animator would think of, you know. Certainly, that's a great one, Ed. I've never seen it.
Thanks, Taylor.
Well, I think of like Bullwinkle pulling the rabbit out of my hat.
I was thinking of that too. But yeah, he pulls him out of a top hat, right?
Yeah. So Taylor, this is one of the ones that you sent me as one of your favorites. I wonder if you could talk about this. What did you have in mind here?
Well, this is some of the work I do for Hoover Digest. Now, Hoover Digest, which is the journal of the Hoover Institution, it's a conservative think tank. It's not always my politics, but they're great great folks to work for, and I adore my editor. I've been doing work for them for 26 years now. And of course, you know, they take a conservative view. The Hoover Digest, the Hoover Institution, they don't, you know, they're not involved in evangelical stuff. They're not climate deniers. They're not anything like that. But they always have a conservative, or in foreign affairs, a neocon perspective on events. And this was simply, you know, with the, to me,
well, you
the
got
left,
the guy that's picking his pocket. He's white and he's kind of scruffy,
right,
picking the wallet out of the pocket of the Black Lives Matter protesters.
So, right. Well, this,
what is the point you're making here?
Well, the point, okay, the point is that leave it to the left to come up with stupid slogans, whereas defund the police has got to be among the dumbest ever. Because first of all, when anybody who supports defunding the police, the first thing they say, well, it's not really defunding the police. They're just reallocating resources to different things, that maybe some of it to social work, et cetera, you know. But at the time, as you remember, this was like during the George Floyd murder, and there were lots of demonstrations, and some of them got violent. Fox pretty much blew it all out of proportion by having it on the news constantly. But I can take my glasses off. This is kind of silly, making a serious point looking like this. But the point is that you take too many cops off the street, and this is what you get.
You're stuck with the slogan.
Why the character of the guy that's picking his pocket? And what's the symbolism of picking his pocket?
Well, first of all, as you probably know, in political cartoons and television advertisements, the thieves are always white. You know, they're never black. And because you can't do that. And so I did the typical thing. I sort of tried to make a joke out of that by having the white thief steal the wallet out of the, maybe it's a cell phone, but it's a wallet or supposed to be, out of the Black Lives Matter protester who happens to be African-American. I don't know if you should read anything more to it than that. That best I can do, Daryl.
Okay. Did that go along with the article and what the article
Yes, it did. Yes. My editor gives me a lot of leeway into how to approach things, which I'm eternally grateful. But still, I have to come up with an illustration that does make the point that the writer is trying to make.
That's a similar gig to the Washington Whispers that we both did.
Right. That you and I both did.
Yeah, we both did.
So here's another Hoover Digest one where you have the protester. There was a time when the protesters were throwing paint at paintings in museums. And I assume that this is at that time. It was during COVID. And she's painting a Hitler mustache on Columbus, who Columbus is no longer the heroic figure he
right,
was.
Exactly. Well, he's still a hero on Staten Island, where I used to live, the most Italian entity in the United States. But this was the Hoover Institution. They've, contributors to the Digest, there have been a number of stories about political correctness and wokeness, et cetera. And I think I can speak for just about any political cartoonist. We hate wokeness as much as the people on Fox News hate it. And we may agree with a lot of the politics and the ideology, but restraining what people can say and where they can say it, And it's also very, very touchy. And,
you know, Taylor, we get complaints from cartoonists about other cartoonists' cartoons all the time.
Really? Well,
it's something that cartoonists like to do as much as their readers.
Have we got some cartoonists in your stable who are big on, they're in favor of everything, you know, being woke?
There are cartoonists who argue that we should drop other cartoonists because they don't like their points of view.
Really?
Wow.
Well, I know you have your conservative cartoonist section, and you could run a lot of my Hoover Digest stuff for that.
So here you go, Taylor. You've got the caveman and the cave lady, and he is doing some sexual harassment here. I guess sexual harassment is old as the cavemen.
Yeah, it's a lot older than that. I've got some butterflies in my garden who are committing sexual harassment all the time. There's a species of butterfly that's Florida state butterfly, the zebra longwing. And you see it in the along Gulf Coast states. But these butterflies, the males, will gang up on the female still in its chrysalis. It hasn't emerged from its chrysalis. So they will actually gang up on it and sort of fight with each other to be the first one to get to her, even before she completely exits her chrysalis as a butterfly.
It's so, like, yes, a little Jeffrey Epstein estate.
Exactly right. So Yes, the sexual harassment is nothing new.
What was the point that you're making here?
Exactly.
Is that the point, that it's old stuff?
Time immemorial.
I thought Dumb and Dumber was great fun. You've got the Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels caricatures as the donkey and the elephant, and they look like both Jeff Daniels and Jim Carrey and the donkey and the elephant, and that's really hard to do.
It's a beautiful drawing. Very, it's elegant.
Well, thank you much. You know, Ed, you know, it doesn't always work. You know, sometimes you try it and it fails miserably. But thank you very much. And the thing is, I did this, I think, in 2014.
It says it's for Elvin and Don. Who are Elvin and Don?
There was a reason for that, and I'd have to go back for that. There was a reason.
Here are the Honeymooners. And you got Jackie Gleason wearing his MAGA hat, and Art Carney wearing his mask on his eyes, and the wife, Alice, wearing her mask. It's a COVID cartoon, but they are all quite in character with the way that they're wearing their accoutrements.
Well, of course, you know, the point, having a blue mask for Alice and having Ralph with his red MAGA hat, and of course Art Carney being an idiot, but
because he's undecided.
Well, that's true too.
He's wearing his mask wrong. I see. Okay.
Another evergreen.
Yeah, well, I thank you. It's nice to do those now and then. But Ed, I'm sure you will agree that when you have to put masks of any kind on, and sometimes with hats, but definitely with masks of any kind on the character you're drawing, you kind of got to do the character first and then add the mask.
Absolutely. I think I've only done it once with the Prince Charles, King Charles.
Well, that's a great cartoon.
Thank you. I had fun with it.
Jackie Gleason is not the easiest guy to draw.
You're right.
I had to do that once. I had to design him as an animated character.
And it was
great. Because there's not that many photographs of him, I found, at the time, anyway.
You'd certainly be an expert on this sort of thing. But for comedians who are really physical comedians and rubber face comedians, like Robin Williams, they can be hard to caricature, you know?
For sure. For
as
sure.
opposed to say someone like Jerry Seinfeld.
Well, you got Jim Carrey as a donkey.
Well,
that's beautiful. Oh, I love this.
Joni Mitchell, very nice. I should say that I asked you guys to send me some of your favorite caricature art, and these are just great. I enjoy this. You know, we do so much Trump bashing. It's nice to step back a little bit and realize that people draw other stuff.
Well, Joni Mitchell's got a great face, and she has these magnificent hands. It was just fun to do, and I guess her most famous album was Blue. And I thought of that, I think, after I began the sketch.
You were just starting with She Paints a Picture with her music?
Correct.
And then it became Blue, and that's great. And here is Pope Benedict, and that is so true. He turned out to be such a vile, abusive cardinal hider. Terrible. Who is the cardinal on top?
It's just you know, that's always a problem in caricature. If you caricature an editorial cartoon and you include a character that's not a particular person, and
he looks kind of specific.
Sometimes it gets up confusing people, but I just feel that, you know, it looks like a typical cardinal to me.
What's the bottom guy's name? Ratzenberger?
Well, it was Pope Benedict, originally Cardinal Ratzenberger. And, you know, I have to say that I know he did actually apologize for the sins of so many priests. But as little and late as that was, I don't think Pope John Paul ever did.
I don't know that they acknowledged the protecting the cardinals and the cover-ups. They apologize for the actual abuse broadly and not specifically.
Well, what can I say? I don't know this. The guy in the mortar board is supposed to be a cardinal, you know, just a priest. The idea was priest.
He's a great character. The guy on top is a great character.
He is.
It looks like a great caricature of someone in particular.
Well, I think this is very good.
Yeah.
Dinosaur chasing another birdie dinosaur. He says, pulling up the teeth. Says, gah! And we know that paleontologists theorize that Tyrannosaurus Rex was as smart as a baboon and could use tools. We don't have to always draw the current events in our editorial cartoons.
Well, right. Well, this was actually, I remember just listening to the radio, or either that or the science section of the New York Times, and there was a story about some thought that because the brain case of Tyrannosaurus Rex was pretty big, that they had pretty big brains for a dinosaur, and there was a thought that they could use tools, and that just gave me the thought, use their little tiny forearms.
Very good. And they speak French.
Yes, they do.
Here you have a wonderful Zelensky. I think this is great.
You know, this turned out to be harder to do. Zelensky's face is easy to caricature, but I did base that on it's one of the famous portraits of George Washington. And it's one that actually was pretty hard to kind of morph, to make Zelensky fit it, because Zelensky is a very short man and Washington was quite tall. And Washington's uniform was tapered, this very tapered cut to it. And to fit Zelensky into that so that it was believable was kind of difficult.
Because Zelensky's kind of stocky too.
Yes, he's
the opposite of George Washington.
He is very much like their George Washington.
Exactly. Yeah. I think so.
I think this is just brilliant. Wow. Crowd scene of all these past presidents. And you have a story to tell about this. We remember the shoes being thrown at George Bush in the lower left when he was speaking in Iraq. And that came to be what he was known for. But right, you and take that out and you put John Adams in there. That's right.
Yes, this was done for, I had kind of a, I've been with three syndicates before. The two before you were Tribune Media Services. Were Los Angeles Times Syndicate, which I was with for 23 years, and then Tribune Media Services with 8 years. And my time with Tribune Media Services was, to me, pretty unhappy.
Well, isn't it so much nicer to be with us?
Absolutely. But I think so. I was canned eventually by Tribune Media, but I just didn't like dealing with them. And the Tribune had bought Los Angeles Times. And like so many mergers, they didn't care about they were going to do it their way, and they didn't. So they bought up everything from the Los Angeles Times Syndicate, and from my point of view, they didn't care anything about it. So I kind of languished, and of course, it was very much a time, the beginning of the era of newspapers contracting. So yes, I drew that. I drew the original with the shoes, and they made me take the shoes out. Therefore, John Adams.
And the reason being that was critical of George W. Bush.
It wasn't Bush per se. They decided they didn't want to have anything critical of any of the presidents. And I understood that because this was published right around the time of Obama's first inaugural.
I think this one could have been a cover of Time magazine.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that, Ed. What the Chicago Tribune did was they had a supplement. Of course, Obama was associated with Chicago, and they had a supplement in the newspaper for the inauguration with all stuff about Obama. And that was either on the front or on the back. I forget.
Well, I think it's wonderful. And I think it's just outrageous to ask you to take the shoes away from George W. Bush.
Bit of business in there.
It
Don't
is.
You own that? You bought that for me, didn't you, Daryl?
I did. I have this one. So, Ed, we are back to you. And here you are on the Hollywood Reporter with both the front and back cover.
This was my first cover for the Hollywood Reporter.
Wow.
I wasn't hired to do a cover. I was hired to make this an inside illustration, but they liked it.
So this was a two-page spread inside.
Yeah, and they wound up using it on the cover as well, but that wasn't the plan. And led to a whole bunch of
This is just wonderful.
Ed, I wanted to ask you, I was looking at this when Daryl first presented this podcast to us. He had some of your Hollywood Reporter scenes. And first of all, I love the Kathy Bates up there. That's just great.
Did she do a nude scene?
She was naked in a movie. She was in a bathtub. That's right. What movie it was.
But I'm just going to make sure that's John C. Reilly up there
under
John C. Reilly, and I love the Zeta Jones. Is that Polanski? That's Polanski there in the.
Where's Polanski? Oh yeah, on the right.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Okay.
Yeah, that's him for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Oh, one other. Is that Almodovar by Zeta Jones?
Yes.
Okay, great.
I had a good time.
Oh, that's great. Here's another one. Is this front? This is the alternative covers?
These were inside the section covers, two different years of the Academy Awards.
Great. They're great.
And I remember something. They contacted John Stewart about using the image for something else, and he didn't okay it. So I don't think John Stewart cared for this.
What a poor sport if he didn't care for this, because it's great. I should add that it's not uncommon for editorial cartoonists to do other stuff too, because it isn't really a business plan to be an editorial cartoonist. Yeah. There's got to be other stuff in the mix. And your other stuff is fantastic.
I love the rendering of John sitting there as a thinker. The rendering of the suit, the hands is just great.
Thank you. Thank you. I spent a lot of time figuring that one out.
So here is Kirk and Spock, Nimoy and Shatner. Those are great.
Thanks. I think I did this for myself. I don't think it was published anywhere.
Really?
I just did it because I wanted to do it.
Well, the world needs it, Ed.
Yeah. You could post this with Cagle, because I mean, somebody's going to, Star Trek is such great fans. And even though Nimoy's gone, Shatner apparently will never be gone, and somebody would publish it for sure. For some reason,
they would. Yeah. Somebody would want it. And it is amazing how William Shatner goes on and on, and he doesn't look as old as he is.
Yeah. He's in his 90s.
He's like 93 or four. Or 92 or three, I should say.
He's got all his marbles.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great. And he's never taken himself very seriously.
This is a great one, Ed.
Thanks. The part that I like works the best here is the Sopranos with lasagna in front. I don't even remember some of these shows.
Well, let's look at it bigger, because you got to look at it bigger.
And Larry David with his contemplating whether the glass is half empty or half full.
Oh, I see. That's great.
Yeah, that is a great idea. Ed, I not question the caricature, but I'm not certain who the fellow behind Tony Soprano with the...
Tony Shalhoub, I believe.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Reacting to the cigar smoke.
Yeah, right. Was this his Monk character?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
He won a few Emmys, so I think I did him a few times over the years.
Yeah, well, he's one of the great contemporary actors.
Ed, here is another one. This was quite the client for you, Ed.
Oh, they were a great client. And yeah. one day they got a new editor who didn't think caricatures were funny on the covers.
Wow.
They just stopped using me altogether.
Well, you were defining them, and sometimes editors don't like to be defined except by what they choose.
I suppose. The thing with doing these was the limited amount of time. When they announced the nominees to when the artwork was due at the magazine, it was kind of limited. It was like 2 weeks, I think.
Wow. Did you draw them all separately and then?
I drew them all separately in Photoshop, yeah. But I was also working a full-time job, so I would do these all-nighters.
Well, crowd scenes, they can be very tricky to choreograph, you know?
Yeah. And you just have to figure out a couple of bits of business and then kludge it all together somehow.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it keys off of Johnny Depp up at the top. And on each one of these, you have a character that's kind of drawing your eye, and then you pull away. That's really very nice. Another impressive one here with your Martin Scorsese stealing the show.
Scorsese.
Yeah, that one's again.
Leonardo DiCaprio looks wonderful.
Yeah.
Big skull. Don Cheadle.
Don Cheadle. That's just perfect. The eyes are just perfect.
Thanks. He broke down into symbols very, very easily.
Yeah.
Great. This one is equally great.
Oh, wow. Great.
Thank you. Yeah, I wanted to tell a little story of the cowboy movies. What's the name of the cowboys on top?
The gay cowboy movie.
Brokeback Mountain.
Brokeback Mountain, yeah. So it's the wife of one of the characters suspecting that something was going on. So she's whacking him with the flowers. That's what that's supposed to be. I always try to have fun with the logos and mastheads when I can.
Well, the Gyllenhaal, and again, I'm totally forgetting the name of the other actor. They're perfect.
I drew a Brokeback Mountain cartoon a long time ago, and it was one of my most popular cartoons ever. Do you remember
really?
What it is? Maybe I'll drop it into here.
What was the joke?
I'm not remembering right now, but of course we will remember if I happen to drop it in and post. First Ladies.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this was for U.S. News. I think this was a Washington Whispers.
I think there were, let's see, first was on Washington Whispers, there was Kate Sally Palmer, who had the job for like about 20 years.
Yeah, both of you guys drew for U.S. News and World Report.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great Michelle. All of them are great. But
At different times we worked for them.
I hadn't thought of that the way you've got her mouth there with the underbite. That's just...
thank you for appreciating that. That was a struggle.
Yeah. And the
Eleanor looks like, I'm complimenting myself, but it looks like one of your drawings to me.
All right. Well,
John Boehner, they really did push him into a box.
Banner in a box.
I remember seeing this originally.
That was a fun one. I'm a little surprised you picked this one. But
so tell us about this one.
This was not a paid job. This didn't appear anywhere. I just wanted to do
this. What's his name again? Jeremy?
Ron Jeremy.
Ron Jeremy is a real sleazeball kind of porn actor.
You know, I captured the sleaze.
Everything about this is perfect. The eyes. You know, it's a funny thing. It almost looks... Rembrandt in the way that, you know, kind of a thing in the face, but I love the reflection off his belly.
a little greasy.
He's such a foul, nasty character. It's
you know, I sent this to him. I don't know how I got his address, but I sent it to him, and he just wrote back, "Thanks a lot."
How'd you get his address?
I forgot how I got it.
Crazy. And then he went to jail for what, rape or sexual harassment or something?
Yeah, I think it was rape.
Well, you had fun with the chest and belly hair, that's for sure.
I had fun with a lot of things in this one. And those are cheap apartment window shades.
Yeah.
You know, the cheapest kind you can get from Builders Emporium.
Well, Disney.
This one made the rounds. This one has some history. I did it originally for Hollywood Reporter. It was an issue that was dedicated to famous directors or studio heads, something like that. I did the Warner Brothers. And this one, I wound up adding the copy that all started with a mouse. And I sold a bunch of prints. I was feeling that was my entrepreneurial phase. I sold a bunch of matted prints of this. And that was a pain to do.
Well, it's a
beautiful piece. Why was it a pain to do?
Matting them, I sold them in mats, so I had to get the mats cut and packaging them and wrapping them. That was the pain part.
I mean, being that you worked for Disney for so long, what kind of restrictions did you have on
anything? I didn't have any. The first time I was asked to caricature a Disney person, I was doing a lot of work for California Magazine, and they were doing an article about, it was when Disney was starting Disneyland in Paris, and they were talking about that. They wanted me to caricature Michael Eisner, and I didn't think that was a good idea at the time. So I did an illustration of what I thought was a typical erudite French guy selling souvenirs at Disneyland instead. I don't think I put in this batch for you, Daryl.
Well, I only have two more cartoons, but I picked out the most popular cartoons that each of you has ever drawn in the many years that you've been with us. And Taylor, this is yours. You've got Barbie and Oppenheimer. Barbie says,
"So, Oppie, who's going to clean up at the box office this summer? You or Barbie?"
And Oppenheimer says, "God help us." Your most popular cartoon ever.
Wow.
And how many years? It's probably been 20 years you've been with us.
Well, 15 with you. I didn't realize that till I was going through all the cartoons back to the beginning. And you can thank Barbie for that. Thank the Barbie madness, you know.
Well, congratulations. This is your top cartoon. And Ed, this is your top cartoon. It's a COVID cartoon. And that looks like your self-image with your wife.
Hey, watch it. Oh.
And she says, "I didn't think it would all go away, meant Social Security and Medicare."
Yeah, that one made the rounds.
Well, you know, of course, Social Security, and given the average age of the people who are still reading newspapers.
I guess that explains it. Social Security and Medicare in a cartoon. That gets newspapers to print it.
And puppies, too.
Yeah, well, right.
Gentlemen, that is all of the cartoons we have today. We've got to do this again soon, because you sent me a lot more cartoons than that.
Yeah, and Ed, I don't know about Ed, but I spent about 10 hours going through cartoons.
I spent a long time, too.
A whole bunch of stuff that you want.
A lot of leftovers.
One day we can do those.
I get really bored drawing Trump. I'm so sick of him. It's and I think that's really what I should do all the time.
I hear about cartoonists getting sick of Trump. And you know, newspapers don't like to Trump cartoons. It's a different audience on the internet and for these podcasts, which is an audience that only wants Trump. And that's a surprise for me. All these cartoons that didn't get reprinted that much in newspapers are the ones they want to see on these podcasts.
Daryl, have you got any idea who is listening to you? I mean, who is listening to your podcast? Any idea of the demographic?
Oh, yes. It is by far mostly males over age 55. In fact, those are also the people that are fans of newspapers and fans of our editorial cartoons in other places. And it is frustrating because we'd like to reach a wider demographic. We hear so much about the kids studying our cartoons in school, and they write to us about their homework. And we do a lot of sales to high school textbooks and to the testing services because the cartoons are on the AP history test in 8th and 11th grade. But, you know, kids leave high school and then they never look at the newspaper again.
Well, yeah, of course. Hardly anybody under the age of 40, they just get their news with their phones, correct?
They silo themselves on the phones. If you want to get nothing but news about kitties and video games, that's the news you get on your phone. And I think that's just a shame because, you know, newspapers were edited to let people know all the things that they should know. There was someone who was making decisions that were thoughtful about what a well-rounded person should know about, and not just video games and kitties. That's a shame that that's lost.
Do you think that years from now, looking back in history, that the newspaper as we know it really dates back to the New York Times in the 1850s or 60s, and then really until about 2000, 2010. And that's really been the lifespan of newspapers.
Why do you pick the New York Times in the mid-1800s?
The reason why is because I don't know my history enough about this, but it seems to me that was very important because they kind of set the standard for modern journalism. And
you give them a lot of credit. I don't like the New York Times. They're just terrible about editorial cartoons.
I'm sorry. That's true. I wasn't thinking about editorial cartoons. But it seems to me that modern journalism really began at that era with that particular newspaper.
Well, I'm not inclined to give the New York Times compliments here.
Well, you know, before then, you had these rags that were, in a way, kind of like how a lot of news is disseminated now. You had all these partisan newspapers owned by rich people that were doing the bidding of this or that. I know that in the early days of our republic, it was very much the case that, you know, Jefferson had his favorite newspapers that supported him. Hamilton, they were constantly trying to dig dirt on each other, these newspapers. And in a way, it's a lot more like it is now.
I think I will cut that out.
You can probably cut about most of what I said out, Daryl.
Okay, gentlemen, it was a pleasure having you.
Nice seeing you, always.
So that is the Kegelcast for today. Please remember to subscribe wherever you're watching the Kegelcast and sign up for our newsletter at kegel.com/subscribe. And you will always be reminded of the podcast when they come on and any cartoon news. And a new thing we're doing in the newsletter is we send you the top 5 most popular cartoons every day. And that's very exciting. And it changes from day to day. And you never know what they're going to be. So thank you, everybody. And thank you again, gentlemen. This was very nice.
It's a long time to go through stuff, doesn't it, Taylor?
Okay. I'll see you guys later.